Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Here it is, the 28th of April, 2021. A pleasure to be talking to you this morning. We have a lovely show that we're going to be doing today, all about social-emotional learning with a little twist, if I may, because we're going to be talking with my friends at Urban Assembly. All right, we've got the principal of the Urban Assembly High School for the Performing Arts. All right, and so it's going to be a really fun show to see how they've incorporated social-emotional learning into a performing arts school, especially during a year of COVID, by the way, in New York City. So it's a lot of things to talk about. We're going to have a great time with the principal of the school, who's Megan McMahon, and also with our old friend, who's the executive director over at the Urban Assembly. He'll tell you all about that. The chief executive officer, that's Dave Adams. All right, so we're going to archive the show over at ACE-ED.org. That is our American Consortium for Equity in Education, pre-K-12. Please go over there, see what we do, enjoy our magazine, which is called Equity and Access. It's an online journal. It's excellent. All our podcasts are over there. This one will be archived there as well. There's a lot of other information all about equity and access. Please go over, check it out, tell your friends. Free. Everything you do over there is free. ACE-ED.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, pre-K-12, if I may. And I'm going to have it spinning there. There we go. Hey, Dave, how you doing? Larry's here.
Larry, I'm so happy to hear from you, man. How's everything going?
Everything's going just fine. Everybody's fully vaccinated now. And I live in Maine, as you know, and hopefully the weather will eventually become spring-like. How was it down there today in the, in Jersey, New York metro?
85 degrees. I woke up today. I went over to wake up my kids. The first thing they said was, Daddy, can we get out the pool? I splashed around. It is 85 degrees, so I'm really excited to think about what the weather is today.
You know, I got to ask you, we're doing the show at 9 in the morning. Is it 85 already?
No. I just have an optimistic outlook, right? Oh, so it's not what it is. What's it going to be?
It's 85 is pretty good, and it must be very warm there today, and we're waiting for that up here. It's just taking too long. Megan, where are you today?
Good morning. I am calling in from our school in Harlem, and we are also looking forward to the 80-degree weather.
Well, I wish I could have 80-degree weather. Can you send some up? I'll just take 30 degrees of that. You can have the other 50. How's that sound? It's nice, but it's just not nice enough yet, I'll tell you. Megan McMahon is the principal of the, I guess, an Urban Assembly High School. Is it a high school?
Yes, Megan. Urban Assembly School for the Performing Arts. We are a public high school, 9 to 12.
High school, yeah. Okay, no, thank you. I just didn't say high school, and I just said to myself, maybe I'm missing something here. I better ask. Okay? And I love this. And, David, I'm going to start with you. Just tell everybody about Urban Assembly, then I'm going to swing over to Megan.
Well, I appreciate the question, Larry. The Urban Assembly is a nonprofit that has a mission focused on enhancing the social and economic mobility of our young people by improving public education. So that means we have 23 schools, including Megan's school, High School for the Performing Arts within New York City, as well as consult across the country around key issues around educational improvement, like social and emotional learning, academic support, post-secondary readiness, as well as alumni support. So really excited to be here today. Really excited to be here with one of our star principals who've been doing really great work in this context.
And always a pleasure to have you. And actually, we always talk about SEL. Then you surprised me a minute ago when you said social, then economic, which actually is not a bad way to present that SEL, I got to tell you. Social and economic learning as well as emotional learning. I love both of them. Okay, it sounds pretty cool. All right, Megan, tell me about the school. You've been principal. How long have you been principal? You've been there. You've been assistant principal since 2010 and since 2014 principal. Okay? Tell us about this school, which I have to say is the only college prep non-audition performing arts high school in New York City. All right? I want to live forever.
Yep. Absolutely. So we opened our doors in 2006. I was the founding history and dance teacher. And then became assistant principal and am now proudly serving as principal. So this is like a second home to me. But when the school was founded in 2006, it was founded on the belief that all students deserve access to a rigorous academic and artistic high school experience,
yes,
regardless of prior access or ability. And we are deeply committed to this mission, and therefore we do not screen or audition any of our students.
So how do you decide who goes in? How many students are there?
We have almost 400 students, and we are just part of the New York City enrollment process. So students, if they list us anywhere on their high school application, they have a chance of getting in here. But we don't do any screening or audition because we want to make sure that any student who is interested in the College Preparatory Performing Arts education has the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, but my curiosity, and I'm just curious because me and another thousand other people don't understand. I just want to clear it up. Okay, if you got 400 kids and 1,000 kids apply, let's just say, how do you pick the kids who are going to get in, or how are they selected? Is it just a blind lottery, or how is it?
Oh, yeah, it's part of the New York City enrollment process, and so we don't rank or touch any of the applicants, and it's done through the enrollment system, and they have their own algorithm, and it comes out, and we get
there you go.
A list of students who have offers.
Well, that's pretty darn cool, I got to tell you, okay? And most people don't understand, including me, how that New York enrollment system works. Okay, so thank you for clearing that up a little bit.
Larry,
and now, yes, go ahead, Dave.
It's basically how I got married, right? You just kind of put in your preferences and outcome all these folks who want to, you know, maybe have a date with you. So if you think about it like that, it may give you a little bit of a better sense of how this works.
Thank you. That's great. I appreciate that. Okay, it's funny. All right. And it's interesting because it's a performing art. So, and Megan, I just got to keep asking this question. I'm asking the same question. So a kid who wants to be a dancer or a kid who wants to, let's say you're in Harlem. Where are you? What street are you at? Where are you?
We're 129th in Amsterdam.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so you're at 129th. Let's go 140 blocks south into the Village or something, okay? And a kid who wants to be a dancer, okay, do they just put down on their enrollment for high school that they wanted to go to the UA School for the Performing Arts, and if they're lucky, they'll get there, and then they go. But how do you know they're even a decent dancer? Or does that even matter? I'm just curious about this. It's really great.
Yeah,
I love it.
That doesn't matter to us. The skills that they come in as an artist doesn't matter. It just matters that they have an interest in the arts, and we create the environment where we support them to take risks in the arts and develop as students and artists and individuals.
Oh, that's really cool. I got to tell you, I just love this. And kids come from all over the city, right?
Yeah, we have students from all 5 boroughs, so we have kids who travel a far distance. But they may not have had all of the access to training to get into one of the audition schools, and/or they've trained, but they really don't have the confidence yet to do the audition. And so this is a place where they can feel safe to come in and explore.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I got to ask you this. You were a history and dance teacher, right?
Correct.
All right, put those two things together for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so our motto at UASPA is that education equals options. So really utilizing education to explore all of your passions and allowing that to open doors across many different interests and passions. So I was someone who studied dance my whole life, who also had a passion for history and education, and this school combines all of those loves for me.
I wish you could see me. I have a big smile on my face. I love that. What kind of dancer are you? What kind of dancer are you?
I primarily studied ballet, modern, and jazz growing up.
Wow, you are a well-rounded individual, I have to tell you. It's unbelievable, and you bring that wonderful combination to this school. I just think it's great. All right.
We're looking forward to being back in person because I usually perform with students on the stage at least one showcase during the year.
Good for you. Good for you, okay? And you don't want to see me in a tutu, so I'm going to move on from my opportunities in ballet. And I look a lot like the hippos in Fantasia, if you remember those, okay? That's kind of what I would look like in a ballet thing.
We would still welcome you here to explore your artistry, though.
Which proves you have a great heart, and you are a great educator if you would take me in, and I do appreciate that. All right, I really got to tell you. So now talk to me. And, Dave, I'm going to get into the SEL part in a minute, but I have to talk about this. It's been COVID. New York got hit really bad for the last year and a half. Okay, I know things are winding down, coming back up, that sort of thing. But how'd you do a performing arts school, Megan, in COVID times? Wow.
Yeah, it was challenging, but the arts are, you know, the heart and soul of our school. And so we continued online. We had to learn really quickly how to use online technology, but we basically transformed our in-person performances to online showcases. And they have a different feel, but they're still powerful and emotional.
Of course.
And have been really important for us to continue because they're really important for our students' social-emotional well-being.
Absolutely. And let me ask the other side of that, the teachers. You guys are all artists yourselves, okay? And in whatever field, you know, dance, whatever, acting, whatever the case may be. How did the teachers do this past year? How rough a road was it for them?
It's been challenging for everybody. You know, we're in education because we love to be with people. So it definitely felt isolating, but I mean, my arts teachers, their homes have turned into dance and vocal and theater studios. My dance teacher moved her couch and is running dance classes from her living room. But we are slowly starting to get back into the building. But the arts has never left the program, even when we went remote.
Yeah, you're going to heaven, I can tell you that much, Megan. You and your whole staff, it's unbelievable, all right? Write me and Dave and tell us what it's like, please, okay? Would you do that for us?
Well, I wouldn't count me out so quickly there, Larry.
I don't know, Dave. You're going to have to press me. There's only so much room up there, and Megan and the staff has taken a lot of it. Yes?
I have to defer to that.
Okay. Okay, good man. Okay, good, great guy, by the way, everybody. All right, so now let's talk about social emotional learning and all this. And Dave, I want to swing back to you because that's a keystone of Urban Assembly. So just you get us started on this one.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I mean, this is, you talked about this before with regards to what it means to invest in social and emotional development during remote learning and a pandemic. One of the things I'm most proud of when I talk about the work that Megan School has done and the Urban Assembly School for the Performing Arts is ensuring that students have a high-quality experience in the social and emotional domain, not just through what they learn from each other in terms of skills, but also through what they learn in context of the arts. In fact, two of our students just actually had a congressional briefing maybe on May 27th where they presented to Congresswoman where they presented to senior educational officials talking about what social-emotional learning meant to them in the context of the pandemic. So, you know, just like the arts keep marching on, social-emotional learning keeps marching on, and that's a testament to those who care about this work.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, it's a kind of a nice conjunction right now. Did they go to Washington, or was that all in New York City?
That was all in
to
New York City.
People?
So usually they actually just went from, like, their bedroom to their living room. But, you know, we hope next year we can actually get some kids down to D.C. when we do our congressional briefing so that they can actually see some of the some of the legacy of the country that we've built. So, we're looking forward to getting kids out and reemerging from our COVID quarantine a little bit stronger, a little bit wiser. I'm a little bit more willing to care about each other.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And, boy, I hope we learn something from all this, and I think we will. And you, I want to say it again. Social-emotional learning has always been a keystone of the 24 Urban Assembly schools. It really has, all right? And that's going to really pay off now when we need it more than ever, and every other school in the country literally is picking up on that and making a difference. And you guys launched something, and I think it first started at the Performing Arts School, All right. I'll ask Megan, but we'll start there. Okay. The Urban Assembly Resilient Scholars Program. Okay. What is that, Megan?
So we started with the Resilient Scholars Program, and we grounded it in our advisory program, and it was really focused
nice.
On the explicit teaching of social-emotional skills. And then it has really evolved over the years to make sure that we're integrating across all areas of the school, not that it's just living
good.
In advisory.
Yeah. And, you know, but Megan, let me ask you something. And you're principal, and I went to school a long time ago, okay? Well, we called it advisory even back then, and we were all, it was so long ago we were wearing togas, okay? It was that long ago. But, okay, really it was just homeroom, okay? And it was a place for everybody to go to their respective, quote, homeroom. They called it advisory, where they took roll, okay? And there were a few public announcements, you know, where the lunchroom will be closed at 3 o'clock for cleaning or whatever. Okay, I want you to talk about, this is key, how that has changed. And I recognize that your social-emotional learning it goes through the whole school, which is wonderful. But how has a homeroom / advisory changed so that it plays a real role in the teacher's day and in the student's day? Megan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it definitely doesn't look at all like what you would imagine as that traditional homeroom with announcements
yes.
and attendance.
Yes.
We have, when we're in the building, students are sitting in a circle. Every teacher is an advisor. We use the restorative justice circle model.
Oh, nice.
And then we utilize the lessons that we've worked on with Urban Assembly that really focus on the development of social-emotional skills as well as the affirmation of student identity and the focus on building strong community so that students feel a connection to the community and get to know themselves as individuals as part of that larger community.
That's wonderful. The community in this case being the school, am I correct? The larger school, am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I must ask this, and I don't know if Dave wants to do this or Megan, but I'll ask Megan. Megan, no teachers, okay, are to my knowledge, are trained in when they go to college on doing a good job in advisory. Most
mm-hmm.
of them were not trained in SEL. You mentioned,
yeah.
which I love, your restorative justice model. Okay, and although that's wonderful that you're doing that, and we can talk about that, how it works. But my point is we lay a lot onto the, now I'll just call it the advisor, the homeroom teacher, however you want to say that. How did you train them? And Dave can talk about this too, but I'll start with Megan. How did you train them to make something worthwhile out of the advisory period and use it for restorative justice, use it for SEL? I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest way that we've trained is that we also do circles ourselves as adults.
Nice, nice.
And develop our social-emotional skills and well-being so that the training looks exactly like we're asking them to replicate it.
Nothing like learning by doing. How do the teachers... Do you feel like, I want to say this the right way, is there a curriculum involved in this, or do the teachers kind of just let it go and it just start a discussion, so to speak? Well, how's it play out? Maybe it plays out differently for everybody. Yeah, I don't know.
We have a curriculum, and Dave can probably speak more about the curriculum that is utilized through Resilient Scholars, but there is a curriculum, and then we have a team of teachers and a group of students who looks at the curriculum and makes sure
mm-hmm.
that it is tailored and matches the needs of our community.
Lovely.
It includes social-emotional learning, it includes the focus on identity, and it includes the focus on college and career readiness.
Good, and I hope it includes advocacy for themselves, that they feel real confident in themselves.
Absolutely.
And that they move forward. Yeah, it's got to, you know, because
they're
moving
on. Yeah, but the curriculum was definitely a big piece because teachers are also planning for their other classes, and so making sure that it wasn't just open and loose, but that it was very intentional and focused, and that the teachers had that so they didn't need to come up with something every day.
Wow, that is super. Dave, you want to talk about it on a larger scale?
Yeah, I think what Megan's talking about is spot on. There's a couple of things that we've learned over a couple of years. The first thing is giving a base, a foundation. And you mentioned this, Larry, teachers don't leave teacher education thinking, I'm equipped to develop the social and emotional skills of the young people in front of me. Maybe they're equipped to teach English or math or social studies. So the investment in professional development matters. Taking that time matters. Having teachers experience what they expect students to develop, those things matter. Having a curriculum that grounds that conversation, and Megan mentioned this, right? It doesn't have to be word for word, but it's a starting point, so you're not sitting here kind of reading psychological and social developmental literature to think about how to support self-management of kids. It gives you a space that you can start off of so they can have a discussion. I mean, Megan uses a really innovative approach in which the seniors are actually teaching the juniors, or excuse me, the freshmen.
Good.
So they're actually engaging with this lesson and development through the students themselves, which I think is a really cool thing in high school. And then lastly, making sure there's time to refine and reflect. Megan's been doing this work for a long time, and when you have that language, that consistent language, then we can integrate it throughout the school day. It doesn't just have to be isolated to that advisory time. So I think she said it well, and I just want to reiterate some of the main points that she described when we think about what it means to create a guided implementation model around organizing your school for the principles of social-emotional development.
Yep, it's very, very important, learning by doing. So, Megan, you know, as the day goes on with the kids, all right, and the teachers, how do they, and you must have seen this, give us a concrete example of how a teacher uses what's going on with the social emotional learning, how it represents itself in the academic subjects. Maybe that's a good way to put it.
Sure. Well, first of all, at UASPA, students are known very well, and a lot of that comes through from the advisory program. But we're also working to cultivate students as independent learners and artists for agency. And this vision for independence and agency are rooted in the teaching and study of Doretta Hammond and Dr. Goldie Muhammad. And it's certainly not enough.
I love Goldie. She's
amazing.
A buddy. I love Goldie.
But it's certainly not enough to just teach SEL skills in advisory, and advisory can't be the catch-all. Students have to have the opportunity to cultivate and apply their SEL skills across all areas of the school. So this is seen through collaborative learning opportunities, student-to-student discussion, project-based learning, during which students have the opportunity to utilize their skills in real-world application. And it's also seen through our focus on equity and social justice issues across the curriculum. So students, through the classroom experiences, students have opportunity and safe space to apply the social-emotional learning skills and competencies.
I think it's great. You know, since you mentioned Goldie, maybe you can put this into perspective, again, at a performing arts school, a culturally responsive education, which is very important. What are the demographics of your school? Who are the kids? And how does the cultural responsiveness fit in? Yeah,
absolutely. Our students are 100% black and brown. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I said okay.
Yeah. And so we really, like, our focus with Dr. Goldie Muhammad and Doretta Hammond is really this idea about creating independent learners so that they're not dependent on the teacher to give all the information and all the knowledge, but that they have the skills and the capability to learn and have agency. And then through our study on Dr. Goldie Muhammad, the real focus on developing identity and developing criticality. So just one example that students are working on right now in our ninth grade humanities course is the adaptation of Antigone. So they read Antigone, and each classroom is now rewriting Antigone through the lens of a current social justice issue.
I love it. I love it. And by the way, Antigone is one of those words I pronounce it Antigone every time I see it. So thank you. Every time I see it, it's one of those. Okay. You know, I'm curious about something, and this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. Your school has an open lottery system. Yet the school, and there's nothing wrong with this, but I'm just curious how it happens. How does it, in a city like New York, which is so diverse, how is it that 100% of the kids are of color? How's that algorithm work? Do you know? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, so that's a deep issue across New York City that the schools are still segregated. A lot of it has to do, and Dave, you can speak to this too, a lot of it has to do with the testing and the admissions starting at elementary school. So there are schools that are set up where you have to test or audition to get in to the schools. And often those schools, the demographics of those schools are not representative of the public school population.
I just made a little half circle with my hands. I get what you're saying, that some of the kids who are of color, okay, don't have the same opportunity to get into some of the other performing arts schools. So they want to go to a performing art schools, and they go to yours. That's kind of what we're saying. That's just the way it winds up because of the way the other ones are judged. That's an interesting situation,
yeah.
Dave. Yeah, wow.
I mean, like, I just going to say this. I think and you know this very well, but at the Urban Assembly, we think very deeply about investing in students versus investing in screens, right? We know that the teaching and learning processes that happen in our school, the learning environment that we cultivate, is one that will support all kids. And that's not the case across
you.
The city. That's not the case
exactly.
in every single school.
Exactly.
And so because of that, when kids want to have an opportunity to experience high-quality education, but are excluded from other schools.
Exactly.
Schools like Megan, schools like the Urban Assembly are the place that they go to cultivate their potential, and cultivate they do. As a matter of fact,
for a rigorous education in their chosen thing. I mean, that's fascinating, Dave. Wow.
For a rigorous education, right? Because we know
that
what matters to kids is their growth. What matters to kids is being able to receive the kind of attention that they need, personalized attention that they need, to understand their strengths and challenges, as Megan was saying. Take independence and understand what the learning is required in order to master a concept or a standard, and then go at it and develop their skills in these areas. So, I mean, you know the Urban Assembly is on a big push to end screens across the city, to invest in students, not screens, to make sure that schools are evaluated based on how well they grow the potential of students, not just exclude the support of students in terms of coming in. And the better we do at that, the more our city will improve their educational outcomes.
That's
the
right.
More folks will invest in our city. And an example, I think, is Megan School, where we invest in all young people who want to be part of her learning community.
And it provides a great opportunity for the kids who need it, but I just want to say I don't know it that well, but from what I'm hearing, it's a terrific school, okay? And you're really you're doing a great job with the kids, and that's wonderful, but we do have to stop that silly exclusion in other schools. It just doesn't make sense, okay? And, you know, you guys are doing exactly the right thing, okay? Let me just say it that way. It's just, wow. Right. I'm glad you're there for those kids. Pardon me. Say it again, Dave.
I said maybe there is a slot opening up for you in heaven there, Larry. I think you're on the right path.
Yeah, well, I am. I am, and I, you know, it's just when you can think about it, but when you hear this stuff, it's just so nuts. Okay, and what you guys are doing is so good. Kids who really need this opportunity are given it by you folks, okay? Otherwise, they would be excluded, okay? And because of all the things that goes into equity and all that, it's just unbelievable. Income level, opportunities in preschool and everything else. I just love what you guys do. It's really just amazing. So, Megan, Dave, do you take this to other schools outside the Urban Assembly, what you guys are doing with such success?
Well, I mean,
hello?
First,
Dave.
I want to say that we want to lead by example.
You do.
For the Urban Assemblies on this campaign, that we want to invest in students, not screens. We want to show schools that if they believe in kids, if they create the structures to know their kids, to be able to give young people feedback about their strengths and challenges in the academic and social-emotional domain, students will grow.
Absolutely.
And we recently had a young person from the Urban Assembly School for Green Careers who was featured in the New York Times for being accepted into Cornell, another unscreened
school. I love that.
That invested in young people. And a special thing about that school is that incoming proficiencies are in English language arts, around 10 to 12%. They graduate students, 76% of the students they graduate are proficient in English language learning. That's 66% growth because of the kinds of structures that that school has put forth. So that's what it means to be an Urban Assembly school, and that's what it means to be an Urban Assembly principal. So I want to say on that.
Yeah,
I would
Megan
also
said
add,
I'm going to say something else before you do, Megan. When you said that magic word, rigorous, okay, at what you said at the beginning of this conversation, too often we just, if I may, we prejudge, it's prejudice, okay, and we are not as rigorous as we should be with lower income kids, kids of color, however you want to say that, okay, and when you said rigorous to me, that is the magic word. These kids are not stupid and they will rise to the occasion. I say that right across the board. Megan?
Absolutely. Well, as Goldie Muhammad said, there's genius in all of our children, which I love.
Yeah, there is.
But I was going to add on to Dave, just as part of this UA family and talking specifically about social-emotional learning, you know, we're not the only Urban Assembly school that really follows this Resilient Scholars program. So we also have the opportunity to visit other Urban Assembly schools, and the teacher leaders who are leading this work have the opportunity to collaborate across Urban Assembly schools and learn from each other, and that makes us all stronger and better at the work.
Yeah, but you're the only Urban Assembly school that's going to give us the next Regina King, so okay. All right. So, and on that note, okay, I want to talk to you because you've been principal now for a while. You're really doing a great job and giving these kids these
Thank
great
you.
Opportunity. It's a college prep school. Talk to me, you must stay in touch with some of the kids. How are they doing after they graduate? What's going on? What have you heard?
Yeah, absolutely. We keep in close contact with them. We always have when we're in the building, we have an amazing alumni day right before Thanksgiving. We did it virtually this year, and it was so wonderful. Students, 100% of our students are accepted into college, but we are focused on college and career, so making sure that students have a pathway after graduation and that they're not only equipped with the traditional academics but also the social-emotional foundation so that they really know themselves well and see themselves in a world beyond high school.
Yep, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You've had a long experience now being with the school since 2006, and I mean, it's just you see the kids grow up, have families, and all that. They become actual adults. It's absolutely amazing.
A text yesterday from one of our founding class students with a picture of her new baby, and I couldn't believe it. But it's amazing.
Yeah, what's going to make you nuts is when that kid comes to school as a high school student, and you remember your daughter kid. Okay, that's when you feel a little old. Okay, you just can't believe it. What you guys do is just great stuff. Dave, what else do people, we got to wind down, what else do people need to know about Urban Assembly, et cetera? Do the pitch.
Well, all right, Larry, here's the big deal. We have an SEL symposium coming up. So you asked before, like, how do we do this work? If you want to find out how to focus on social and emotional learning in your school or your district, I need you to go to urbanassembly.org and sign up for SEL symposium. That's happening in early May. So
it's
go
May
over
5th.
There.
It's next week. It's next week.
May 5th. 5th. You got it better than I do. Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome.
So folks need to go up. They need to get on the website. And from there, they're going to be learning from superintendents. They're going to be learning from Megan, talking about social and emotional learning in the arts. They're going to be listening to students. And we have a keynote from Heather McGee, who just recently published her book, The Sum of Us, who was talking about the role that race has played in draining wealth, not just from African Americans, but from our country as a whole. So what does it mean to be in community in the context of SEL? We call it social awareness. Students demonstrated the need and awareness of others in a greater community. And we're going to be having a conversation with her around how social and emotional learning can help us be in better community with each other. So it's going to be a great symposium. You're going to be hearing from students and superintendents and principals and teachers. And you're going to leave that symposium thinking, I need to do this in my school so that my students can speak and reflect the kinds of things that Megan are talking about today.
That's really cool. And by the way, Megan, there was a great article in the New York Times yesterday on the $10 billion mistake with Hollywood and the way they've left out a lot of black themes, African-American themes, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yeah, I don't know if you saw that, but on that same subject, performing arts, it's a very interesting thing. There's a whole world of opportunity out there, and it's all changing for everybody. I'll tell you, it's all good. Megan, you're going to heaven. If you want, you can take Dave with you. Okay.
Thank you. Dave's been
just
here supporting us in this work, so he's coming with.
You're always welcome here, okay? You just do great work, I'll tell you. It's good stuff.
Thank you so much.
Both, David, Megan. You guys are terrific. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And enjoy that 85-degree weather that's coming to New York. I wish it would come here, for goodness sakes, here in Maine. All right, urbanassembly.org. May 5th, the Social Emotional Learning Symposium. These guys know what they're doing. May 5th, check it out. Just go to urbanassembly.org. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org, our consortium for equity. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.